Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's story is with Sarah Winward. It starts with some lovely swing dancing in the living room and stomping through deep snow with her dog, then gets really intense having Sarah ask herself over and over, where is the break? There's supposed to be a break. Where is the break? Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Birth Song Botanicals Postpartum Herb Bath, which supports perineal healing and self-care regardless of how you gave birth. Go to birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code Birthful for 10% off. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Branch Basics, making cleaning your house simple, affordable, and sustainable with products that actually work. Get 15% off a starter kit today by using the code Birthful at branchbasics.com. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you always for all the love you give the show, your feedback, requests, rating, reviews, just your general support, Patreon support, all the things. If what you hear is helpful, then make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And remember that you can also support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which in this week's case are Birth Song Botanicals and Branch Basics. And that's a lot of bees, and I love them all. Birth Song Botanicals and Branch Basics. Of course, you can take your support one step further and become an official Birthful Patreon by joining the Birthful community at patreon.com/birthful. Not only will you help to keep this podcast going, but you'll also have access to extra audio content for this episode, which includes more about Sarah's back to work challenges, how hard it can be to give up being the primary parent, and some personal musings from both of us on doula work. There's a little teaser about this extra content at the end of this show, so stick around for that. And to find out more and join the Birthful community, go to patreon.com/birthful, patreon.com/birthful. All right, yes, let's jump right in. Let's get to Sarah's story and also figure out why Harry Potter was helpful to her. Here we go. Welcome, Sarah. I am so thrilled to hear about your story. Also, to have an international story because you're from Canada.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Very cool. And so before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a naturopathic doctor. I practice in Toronto, Ontario. I am the mom of one son who is 14 months old right now. And I'm also a birth doula and a lactation counselor. So I'm almost done my hours to become a lactation consultant. Hopefully I will be done those relatively soon, and then I'll be an IBCLC as well. So that's me.
That is very, very cool, because I do know that the requirements for IBCLC have been becoming, I guess, more difficult, like more involved in the past.
It's a lot of hours. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the past year. So that is definitely a bigger lift. Just congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we were talking a little bit when we were off air. You became a doula before you had your son.
I did. I've been a doula for about 3 years. So I kind of went into pregnancy with like very firm ideas about how I was going to give birth.
Right.
Because I had already seen a few births at that point.
Yeah. And one of my first questions is, you know, think back to before you gave birth, when you were pregnant, at the beginning, what were your wishes and thoughts about birth, and what did you have? So from that doula perspective, what was it that you wanted?
So I had seen a few completely unmedicated births using hypnobirthing. There's a birth center locally, which is basically the first of its kind in Ontario. We don't have a ton of freestanding birth centers. I think there are three now, but at the time there was only one, and it's just down the street from me. And it's beautiful, like beautiful. I knew that I really wanted to give birth, either a home birth or at the birth center. And I really like the idea of using hypnobirthing. I'd seen it be really effective for people. And then I also knew that I really didn't want like the epidural Pitocin sitting in a bed birth.
Right.
Yeah.
The more hospital-based traditional.
Yeah. Like almost more, passively birthing with other people managing it. And then the other thing too is I was just kind of curious. Like I had seen a lot of people giving birth, and I was really curious about what it would be like to be on the inside of birthing.
Right. And usually the path is the other way around. Like, well, I think older generations of doulas, myself included, like we had babies and we're like, oh my God, this changed my life. I need to become a doula. And I am seeing more and more now the other way around, where people are becoming doulas younger and younger, which is so exciting.
It is exciting, and it's nice to, I wasn't scared at all. Because I had seen everything at that point from like the unmedicated hypnobirth to like a planned cesarean before I even got pregnant. So I wasn't scared.
So important. So then, pregnancy, was there any eventful situation during pregnancy, or was it just smooth and flowing?
It was generally pretty smooth. I had my licensing exams for my naturopathic license in the like at I think I was like 20 weeks pregnant, so I like didn't pay attention to the fact that I was pregnant until after those exams, and then I was halfway done and went, oh my God, I'm gonna have a baby in like 4 months. So it kind of crept up on me a little bit. And then I ended up he was really long, like really long, and kicked me in the ribs from about, I want to say maybe like 5 months. He was head down really early, and between 5 and 6 months, he started kicking me in the ribs. And people kept saying, "Don't worry, he'll drop and it'll stop. Don't worry, he'll drop and it'll stop." And he was still kicking me in the ribs while I was in labor. So that was my rib is still kind of bruised
Oh
14 months
no.
later.
So I just was talking to another person for a birth story, and depending on how I release these, the show might be after this one. The order might be confused. But we talked to she gave me a great tip. She said she would when baby was kicking on the ribs like that, she would use an ice pack. And right placed on the by the ribs, and I totally
Right
get it
where it is,
because Annika also like jammed her foot right under my ribs.
Oh,
So
the
much, right? The worst. And so
worst.
she would put ice packs there, and the baby would shy away from it. And then it also, the ice would help relieve any
With the
swelling.
bruising. Oh, that's a great idea.
So I love
I
that
like
tip note.
that.
So,
I'm gonna
but I'm
remember
sorry
that.
about your bruised ribs.
It's okay.
So then, you finally were focusing on pregnancy, and he was growing and going deep, dropping down. What, how did it all start? How did you know, or did you know, that you were in labor?
My due date was December 27th. So we didn't do anything at all for Christmas because all my family is at least an hour away, and there was no way that I was driving that. So on December 25th, after having a really uneventful Christmas, my husband and I put on some music and like rolled back our carpet and just danced. In our living room, we both do swing dancing, so we did some swing dancing in our living room, and that was like our little Christmas, and that was it basically. And then I was sleeping on the couch at that point because our couch folds out into a bed, and he was sleeping in the bed because I was getting up all the time because lying down the baby would creep up and then be in my ribs even more, so I'd have to get up periodically in the night and just like let gravity bring him back down. He wasn't getting any sleep if I was in the bed, so I was sleeping on the couch. And around 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I was having contractions, and they were probably like 10 minutes apart, but I didn't really have any Braxton Hicks contractions prior to that. And they, between 2 and probably 5, I was only just like dozing in between, and then I would wake up for them. And so by 5 o'clock, I was like, yep, this is probably labor. So I went into the bed and told my husband, "Hey, just so you know, pretty sure I'm in labor, but go back to sleep. I'm gonna try and go back to sleep too." And I don't know if he did or not, but I tried a little bit to doze, and then And then eventually it was like, no, I think I'm just awake. Like I can't fall back to sleep in between them anymore. And that was around probably 7 in the morning. Yeah, so that's how it started. And we tried to just like have as much of a normal day as possible. Like we had breakfast and we walked the dog, and there had been a snowstorm. So we actually took the dog to the park, and I like was stomping through the snow with the dog, and then stopping for the contractions and then stomping through the snow again, just to like help get things moving a little bit.
And I'm getting all these wonderful visuals of, like, I have now in my mind your imaginary living room where you move the rug and you're swing dancing. And then now I have you stomping through tons of snow with your dog.
It was probably like between 6 and 10 inches of snow, so it was like stomping, and the dog was bounding around in the park, and she was having fun. So yeah, it was early labor was pretty fun, actually.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You're doing a good job of ignoring it and just actually delighting in it.
And we don't have a bathtub in our apartment, so that was like one of the reasons why I was really excited about the birth centers, because the centerpiece of the rooms in the birth center are bathtubs, like these really nice big bathtubs. And we don't have a bathtub, so I later on in the afternoon, I ended up in the shower for a little bit, with some water on my back, and that was really nice. And I have a birth ball, so I was on that for a little bit. Just kind of hanging out in the apartment. And that went on until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, of just kind of hanging around and walking and showering and eating and just hanging out. And then around 4 o'clock, we called our midwives, and I remember thinking, oh, I hope this is actually active labor, because we had the 411 where it was like four minutes in between contractions. They were lasting a minute. But I remember thinking, like, gee, wouldn't it be really embarrassing if, as a doula, I didn't know that I wasn't in active labor. So I'm like
It's
hesitant to
different when
call.
you're in it.
So we called, and she got to our house at around 5:45. And I was 4 or 5 centimeters dilated, 90% effaced, and the baby was like -1. And at that point, the contractions were then 2 to 3 minutes apart and lasting about 60 seconds. So I was like, yes, I'm in active labor. It's true.
You were hitting all the marks. Fantastic.
I remember being really excited that I could figure it out on myself. And she, at that point, was like, well, if you want to transfer to the birth center, now would be a great time to transfer to the birth center. And I was like, yes, I would like to get into that bathtub. So this is now the 26th of December, and the birth center is, we're on one side of like the downtown core, and the birth center is on the other side of the downtown core. So we had to drive through like the major urban shopping center to get there. There wasn't a lot of traffic, but there was a ton of people on the street. So every light, there was like a bunch of people crossing. And I remember thinking, like, thank God these contractions slowed down. Because as soon as I got in the car, they slowed. I probably only had two or three in the car. And I think that was like my brain kicked in, and was like, don't have contractions in the car. It's going to be the worst. So I didn't.
Yeah, and those contractions in the car, we kind of forget that, and it doesn't get talked enough of trying to factor that in into your labor progression, because you want to labor at home as much as possible, or a lot of people do, but then the longer you're at home, the more uncomfortable that car ride gets.
Yeah, and I was so afraid of my water breaking in the car, and then having just like being stuck in traffic and not being able to cope with the contractions in the car.
Oh,
But
there's another trick for that, or another like doula trick here. I'm tossing out tricks left and right. Have a Chucks pad always in your bag. And then if water hasn't broken, put it down on the seat.
On the seat. Yeah. And I do that for my clients, but I didn't think to do it for myself.
Of course. Of course. Sarah, let's take a quick break before you get to the birth center and we'll be right back. Honoring the postpartum recovery is so, so incredibly necessary, and taking a postpartum herbal bath from Birthsong Botanicals can be a super relaxing and healing part of that recovery. And you may be thinking, you want me to take a bath in herbs? Yes, yes I do, and actually not just you, but you and your baby, because postpartum herb baths can soothe your sore perineal muscles and hemorrhoids, slow down bleeding, minimize swelling, and help dry your newborn's umbilical cord. All while creating a relaxing and restoring bonding experience between the two of you. Birthsong Botanicals was founded by midwife Maria Chowdhury, who has attended hundreds of births and has seen firsthand the incredible difference in the healing process from the people who take baths and the herbs versus the ones who don't. Basically, your perineum is going to thank you for this. These postpartum herb baths promote healing regardless of how you give birth or whether you have stitches or not. In the case of cesarean births where staples were used, it's recommended to wait until the staple have been removed before doing the postpartum herb bath, but in any case, it's always good to double check with your trusted health practitioner. If you are concerned about the umbilical cord, the idea here is that you're not just getting it wet. Since this is an herbal bath made with therapeutic herbs, it's designed to aid the body's recovery process, and that includes helping in the healing of the umbilical cord. Maria tells me that when the baby gets immediately out of the bath, the cord might look wet, it's gonna dry, but that with the recommended 3 to 5 baths, the cord tends to fall off in just a few days. Basically, more than a relaxing bath, this is herbal medicine. Give your postpartum body some healing love. Go check out the postpartum herb bath at Birthsong Botanicals and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off. Again, birthsongbotanicals.com. Use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off. And we're back talking with Sarah, who at this point in the story is going through traffic, worrying about her water breaking on her way to the birth center. Tell me more. Yes.
So I didn't tell any of my family members that I was in labor because I just didn't want anybody like waiting for me. I didn't want to feel like people were, there was like the sense of anticipation, but we have a dog. So I had to call my sister because I wasn't sure. This was like 6 o'clock in the evening at this point, and so we needed someone to come and let the dog out and stay with the dog overnight. So I called my sister, and she was actually out on a date. And I just really casually, hey, just whenever you're done, do you mind just going to our house and letting the dog out? Because I'm just on my way to the birth center. And she was like, oh my God, I'm going right now. So then I think she told my parents, and then my parents told my in-laws. So people knew at that point, but which is fine. But she was pretty excited.
The date must have not been that interesting then.
Yeah, I think she shortened it a little bit.
poor person.
Yeah. So we get to the birth center around 7. And by that point I was just like, get me in the bathtub. And it was like, my midwife had gotten there a little bit before me. So it was like half filled up, and she's like, would you want to wait till it was full? And I was like, no. So I like basically walked into the room and was like stripping off my clothes as I was walking in, like through the bag, stripping off the clothes into the bathtub. And it was so nice. It was so nice to get into the bathtub. After basically being like moving around as much as possible for all of early labor, that was like magical. Mm-hmm. Just less pressure. And it took maybe half an hour for my contractions to pick back up once I got to the birth center. But then they were like 2 to 3 minutes apart and 60 seconds for another couple of hours. And then they got very intense. So around 8:30, I'm going to say, they started to be 2 minutes apart and lasting 90 seconds. And that went on and on and on and on and on. And I remember like being in the tub and then getting out of the tub And then being there's like this really lovely big king size bed, and I was in that for a while. And I just remember thinking, like, where is the break? Why is there not a break? Does it, isn't there usually a break somewhere? And so around 11 at night, my midwife suggested using nitrous oxide. So that was another one of the nice things about the birth center, that is that they have the only intervention that they have in terms of pain is nitrous oxide. And when we were planning, I was like, no interventions. I'm going to just have a natural birth with nothing. And at that point, now this is like 4 or 5 hours of these 2 minutes apart, 90-second contractions. And I was like, yes, let's try the nitrous oxide. And that was super helpful once I could get the hang of it. It was really hard. The first time I inhaled it, it tasted kind of weird. And I was like, I don't know if I like this. And I put it down. And then maybe like 15 or 20 minutes later, the midwife was like, you want to try this again? And I was like, okay, yeah, maybe I do. And then once I got the hang of it and the ritual of it, where you like are forced to inhale the gas in, it was really helpful.
And I think that's a great point, that especially if you're doing, because I was going to ask you if the you mentioned at the beginning that you wanted to do hypnobirthing, if that was helpful at all. But I find that people that are really in the zone and going deep into their labor process and then get to a point like this where it's so intense and they go for the nitrous, getting the hang of it, like you said, because it's labor intensive, like you have to time it. You got to think, right? You got to go like,
Yeah, you
okay,
have to
here.
think, you have to like put the mask on and then take the mask off, and yeah.
Yeah, so it does take it helps, but it requires you to go somewhere different.
Yes, and it's actually it's interesting. I forgot to mention I did do the hypnobirthing, but then once I was actually in labor, a lot of the hypnobirthing was like just breathe and meditations and whatnot. And I like once I was in labor, and I kind of knew this before I was in labor, but I'm a really loud person. I was like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do that, and I vocalized a lot. That was my husband said it was really nice when you started the nitrous oxide because you were vocalizing into the mask, so it was less loud.
Oh, but the thing is, and I was very loud as well. It's a coping mechanism, like it helps.
It does help. It does help. And that was one of the things that I remember thinking, which I think being a doula helped me with this, was that like, no, you have to keep the sounds low. Like get low with the sounds. And if I was low with the sounds, then I was low in my body. And that actually really helped.
Yeah, and not low of intensity, but low pitch, like
Yeah, low pitch. Yeah, like down and yeah, as opposed to up high pitched. Yeah, that's yeah,
that
not
tightens
helpful.
and contracts, and the way the other one creates
Yeah.
vibration and relaxation.
Yeah, so that was really helpful, and that was like one of my mental, I think probably that was my meditation, was like keep it low. And then I just made a ton of noise.
Awesome. And
Yeah.
I think it's important to know that sounds during labor can be really good too. So don't limit yourself and let it be what it's gonna be.
Yeah. It was definitely really helpful for me. I think a little bit annoying for my husband, but really helpful for me.
Well, we wouldn't want to annoy him a little bit. I'm sorry. That was snappy. Sorry.
It's okay. My husband would love that. He's a snappy kind of person.
All right.
So the contractions went on like that for a really really long time. And I used the nitrous oxide, and I remember my midwife saying like you have to take breaks with the nitrous. And I would say like I don't know when the contraction is done. And because there was only like 30 seconds of break in between the contractions, she literally at points was palpating my uterus and saying like okay, now it's done. And I would take the break and then immediately be like, oh no, here's another one. And put the mask back on. So that was and that went on until like 4 a.m. So the whole night, I was and I read my I was reading my labor notes from the midwife that from 8:30 a.m. until or 8:30 p.m. until 4 a.m. that was literally the contraction pattern, 90 seconds long and 2 minutes apart.
That is a long
And
time for that intensity.
yes, it is. Someone joked with me after that I was in transition for like 8 hours. So thankfully, like the nitrous was super, super helpful. And at that point, like I do remember thinking like, I can't, I need a break. And it wasn't that it was painful, it was that it didn't stop. Like I was just like, where is the break? I swear at all the other births that I've been at, there have been breaks. And so at some point in the night, I remember like looking at my husband and saying, I don't know if I can do this. Like I just need a break. And we didn't hire a doula, and I kind of gave him a few tips of like things that I would need him to do because we didn't hire a doula. And one of them was like, at some point I'm gonna say I can't do this, and I need you to tell me that I'm already doing it. And so when I said, I don't think I can do this anymore, he looked at me and said, you are already doing this. I was like, you are right. I am already doing it. And at that point, the idea of transferring somewhere else with that contraction pattern, like there was no way. So I stuck it out. And at
So
around 4 o'clock,
what helped you, aside from him saying, yes, I am doing it, what helped you stick it out? What shift? What did anything shift in your mind or your approach to help you rally and continue?
To be honest, I don't really remember. I think it was just the idea of like I would love an epidural right now, and if an epidural was like around, I would get it. But to get an epidural, I would have had to get in the car and drive to the hospital, or we would have had to call an ambulance and transfer in an ambulance to the hospital. And that was just like not gonna happen. So I just like I basically felt like I didn't have a choice with that. I will say that at some point during that sort of period, I actually it was before I started the nitrous. I had a vaginal check, and I was only about 7 centimeters dilated, and that was after like these 2 minutes apart, 90-second contractions started at 8:30, and this was at like 11, and so that was really discouraging for me at that point. And I think that was one of the reasons why I was like, okay, let's try the nitrous. And then that ended up being really, really helpful. So I was like a little bit of a backtrack, but yeah, I remember being like, oh, I hope this was transition, and then it wasn't transition.
But it gave you information of where to go next.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it definitely, I think if I had been like 9 or 10 centimeters, I would have been like, yeah, okay, great, we're good to go. But then like only 7 centimeters, I was like, okay, I need some help here. And so the nitrous was really, really helpful there. And then around 4 o'clock in the morning, my midwife said, okay, I've called the backup midwife. And I said, why? She said, because you're pushing. I was like, what? She's like, I guess I had started doing it spontaneously where I wasn't really paying attention at the peaks of those contractions. I had started pushing, and I guess she noticed it before I noticed, because it was so intense where I was just like riding the wave of every contraction, and that was basically all I could do. And at that point they were like tripling up too, like doubling and tripling, where there would be a peak, a peak, a peak, and then like 15 or 20 seconds break, and then another one would come. So I didn't even really know, and I don't really have a lot of memory of that. So I guess that was transition, where I don't really have a lot of memory other than being like, where is the break? And I was listening to one of your podcasts recently where someone was talking about the quietude in between like transition and pushing. And so I knew that that was a possibility, and I was like, yes, I'm going to get fully dilated, and then I'm going to have a break. And that didn't happen either.
You didn't get the quietude. It was
I
all
did not.
y'all.
So she was like, I'm gonna do what do you like me to check you, because it sounds like you're pushing, and I've called the backup midwife because you're pushing. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. That way my water still hadn't broken. And so she checked me, and as she was checking me, my water broke. So that was exciting. And she checked me and she said, "Yeah, you are fully dilated." So that was really exciting. And I think I did have like a little bit of a cervical lip, and she just said, like, "I'm just gonna hold my fingers here for one contraction. Is that okay?" And I said, "Yeah, that's fine." And then that was kind of it. And then I was, I guess I she kind of asked me if I wanted some coaching with pushing, because I'd already been kind of doing it, and I said no, like I guess I'm already doing it, so why don't I just keep doing what I'm doing? I feel like I have a good rhythm with things. And so I kept again doing that like physiologic pushing, where I would push when my body told me to push, basically, and not any other time. And that went on for a while. And in a lot of different positions, like I pushed in the tub, I pushed in on a birth stool, I pushed on my side, on my other side, standing up. And my son's heart rate kept dropping. At this point, we didn't know he was a boy, but my son's heart rate kept dropping in every position that I was in. So I would have to move. So I didn't really get into a good like groove of it until I was on my back. And I really like that was one of the things where I was like, I don't really want to give birth on my back. I would like to be, up or in the water or somewhere else. But the only place where his heart rate stayed stable was on my back. So that's where I ended up pushing.
And how did it feel for you though, pushing there? Because some people do feel that's what feels good to them.
Yeah, I felt okay. It was nice because I could get like tiny little breaks in between the contractions, because the pushing didn't slow down either. The contraction pattern for the pushing was still like really like 2 minutes apart. There that didn't slow down, so as the any break that I could get was fantastic, and I was already like lying down, so that was probably necessary at
Well, and
that
I'm sure you were super tired by
point. I
then.
was exhausted. Yes, I was beyond exhausted. And I didn't really eat anything overnight. My husband, there's a kitchen in the birth center. There's like a sort of shared kitchen between all the suites. So my husband had gone and made turkey soup in the middle of the night, and my midwife had some and he had some, and I just like didn't I wasn't really into it, and I was so grateful that he had gone and made food, but I just like wasn't super into it. And the backup doula, or sorry, the backup midwife came probably around 5 a.m. and she got me a glass of orange juice, and it was the best thing that I have ever eaten in my entire life. It was
Aww.
so good because
That's
I hadn't eaten
fantastic.
anything all night, and then and forgot.
Yeah, to perk you up and give you some energy, and just that's
Yeah.
so, she came in with fresh mind and fresh eyes and fresh everything. With
Yeah,
fresh orange
totally,
juice.
totally. With fresh orange juice.
Sarah, let's take another quick break and come back for the birth. We'll be right back. You know that I'm a doula, a podcast host, a mom, but what you may not know is that I'm also an eco-maternity consultant. That means I can help people lessen their family's toxic exposure through small yet impactful and sustainable choices. So when the people at Branch Basics wanted to sponsor the show, I was thrilled because using the Branch Basics products is a super easy and sustainable way to change things up for the better. Here's the deal. Conventional cleaning products are some of the most toxic products you'll use in your homes. They pollute the air and leave behind unhealthy residue that sticks around way longer than you think. It's important to know this, but instead of getting anxious, let's do something about it. So the solution for me is super easy. Just replace your yucky cleaning products with Branch Basics. I'm telling you, I've been cleaning my house with Branch Basics for a few months now, and I am not going back. Branch Basics can replace pretty much all of your toxic cleaning products with something safer that is non-GMO plant and mineral based, biodegradable, has no harmful preservatives, and has not been tested on animals. Plus, Branch Basic actually works, and it doesn't leave me coughing while I clean. That is so important. The kit comes with the powerful Branch Basic concentrate and a set of 5 refillable bottles with simple markings that tell you how much water and how much concentrate to add so that you can clean your windows, bathrooms, kitchen counters, do your laundry, and wash your hands. All with one simple concentrate and without having to figure out ratios. That I love. You just fill, shake, and use. Choose to clean your house safely and effectively with Branch Basics. And you, my mighty Birthful listener, can get 15% off a Branch Basics starter kit by going to branchbasics.com and enter the code Birthful at checkout. That's branchbasics.com with my promo code Birthful to get 15% off your starter kit. Branchbasics.com with the promo code Birthful. And we are back talking with Sarah Windward about her birth. And you're about to, well, you're pushing. How about
I'm pushing.
Yes, and had delicious orange juice. What happened
next? Yeah, so I'm pushing. And my husband wanted to catch our baby. So when he was crowning, my midwife was, you know, asked him again, are you sure you'd like to catch the baby? And he was like, yeah, sure. And he is not a super emotional person. So when I had asked him about that, I was like, hey, like in our prenatal visits, like, do you want to catch the baby? Because you could if you wanted to. And he was like, yeah, I guess. And then he watched a couple videos where, you know, the head is born and then there's a pause and then the body is born. And he was like, yeah, I could probably do that. So he went around with the midwife, and got ready to catch the baby. And then when he was born, he had a nuchal hand, which after, in hindsight, I think is probably why my labor was the way it was, because I was reading somewhere that like a lot of OBs would recommend a C-section for that. Because his hand was like right up by his neck. And so when he was born, he just came out all at once. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't like the head and then a pause and then the shoulders. He just like came right out. So my husband was like, I wasn't ready for that. But he caught him and put him on my chest. And that was really lovely. And I think it's much more meaningful to him now that he, you know, knows who our son is as a little person. So I think he enjoyed the experience, even though it wasn't quite what he expected. And then he was on my chest and he actually wasn't breathing right away. So the midwife went to cut the cord because he didn't cry right away. He wasn't breathing. And I said, wait, because I wanted delayed cord clamping. I couldn't quite see what was going on. Like I didn't really realize that he wasn't breathing. And I said, wait, and she did. So, and then we both kind of, you know, rubbed his back, tried to get him to cry. And then about a minute after that, he still wasn't crying, still wasn't quite breathing. And I was like, okay, now. And so I really feel like it was so amazing that the midwife didn't just rush into it, because obviously he's safe. He's still attached to the umbilical cord. It's not like he's not getting oxygen for that period of time. And I said, wait, and she listened. And I feel like that is like truly, truly informed consent. And I was like so grateful to her at that point for that.
Mm-hmm. I can see a lot of other situations where you would have been told what was happening and baby would have been just picked up.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, she didn't wait long. Like it was 60 seconds.
Right.
And then I said like, okay, now, like you have to do it now. And she did. So that was like, it was really nice. Even though he wasn't breathing, I still felt like it was my decision. So she cut the cord and they took him over to the warmer and he ended up needing suctioning, and some oxygen. But he was still in the same room right beside me. I couldn't quite see him, which was, I want to say it was scary, but I don't think I was even scared. I think I was just like, okay, he's getting suctioning and that's fine. I wasn't even really worried at that point, and I don't know if that was just like the birth hormones, but like I was just like, it's fine, he'll be fine. And then he was brought back to me within like maybe 2 minutes. And then he was skin to skin with me. He was skin to skin right away, and then was gone for 2 minutes, and then was skin to skin again. So it wasn't. I think that could have been a really scary situation where he wasn't breathing right away and he was separated from me for a few minutes. But I think because of the way my midwives handled it, like it wasn't scary.
Well, and it's, the energy of the room is really important in terms of emotions are contagious. So if nobody was scared, then that wasn't coming up. Like nobody was bringing that into the space, right? They were just dealing with, you were all just dealing with the situation. And sometimes maybe like I'll link on the show notes to Karen Strange's episode on, she's a, she goes around the world teaching about neonatal resuscitation, but the way she approaches it is definitely from the baby's perspective. And her work is so fantastic in the sense that she's like, yes, you have to do these things, but let's understand how complex the transition from womb and from water to air is and all the processes that have to kick in. And sometimes that needs a minute, sometimes that needs some help, but important to not bring fear into it.
And I think just because he was born so fast, his lungs didn't get the squeeze that most babies get. So I think that was just like he just needed that help with that extra the extra amniotic fluid that was in his lungs.
Was
Because he
he
didn't
afterwards
get
like,
squeezed out.
right? Was he afterwards like, well, he got suction, right? He was gurgly and
He was gurgly for about 6 weeks. Like really weird snorty sounds for about 6 weeks.
Yeah, and
Hi.
it's with that, like that makes sense. Like once, it's always a relief, or I don't know, it feels good to get clarification. Like when you said nuchal hand, I was like, ah, there you have it. Like that makes sense.
A lot of things make sense once I figured that out. It was like, oh, that's why. And I'm sure like my body was trying to like it's probably why he was so high, kicking me in the ribs for so long. And then probably my body was like, this is bigger than it should be, is that's trying to dilate around, because his hand was up in the way. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there was more surface, so it required more force. Your contractions were so intense for so long, and your pushing was long. How when was, we didn't get to that. When, what time was he born?
He was born at 6:50, so my pushing was just about 3 hours.
So in the scheme of things, on the
Not
long
super
side,
long.
on the long side, but not the longest ever, right?
No.
Which I know, like, to probably to listeners who haven't had a baby, go like, what?
It's just on the like the long side of normal range, I guess. But the notes are really funny. If you look at my midwife notes, it says head born 650, body born 650.
All together now. Yeah, he didn't get that squeeze.
No, he didn't get that squeeze.
How? Go ahead.
But then he was brought right back to me. And that was, it was nice.
Cool. So then, how, now you're several months, more than a year after, how are you feeling about this experience? How,
Yeah, that's a
yeah.
great question. So, I initially actually had a lot of guilt around it, or I guess maybe more like shame, where like I wanted a natural birth and I ended up using the nitrous oxide, and like, does that mean that I, as especially because I'm like a naturopathic doctor, so I should be able to do things naturally. And so I actually like that was a hard thing for me to process, which it sounds so silly because nitrous oxide isn't even interventions, it's like very low. And one of the things that helped me the most was actually I asked for a copy of my birth records and I read through them, and could see that like the contraction pattern was what I thought it was in my head, that it was so fast and like no breaks, for so long. And
Yeah, I could see that like, nope, that's true. What you thought happened was true, and that helped me realize that, yeah, it's okay that I didn't I used the nitrous oxide.
No, and I think that's a great point for anybody, no matter what type of birth you have, but even especially helpful if you have a cesarean to ask for the birth records and read through them, and not immediately, like give it time.
No, I did this like probably 6 or 8 weeks postpartum.
Yeah, and even then, like it depends, but I wouldn't, if depending on the level of trauma that people are feeling, I wouldn't recommend doing it right away, but just to have it and like ask for them to have it. And the reason I say especially for a cesarean is because regardless of if you're going with a different practice for your following birth, they're gonna need those records anyway, so to know about operative stuff.
Yeah, and it's your story, right? So it's nice to read your story, 'cause you don't keep track of it in your head. The same way that the midwives or the doctors are keeping track of it. So it's nice to just like have that objective, very objective,
Like skeleton.
skeleton of what happened.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you did that helped you process the experience?
To be honest, I think I had like a fairly smooth transition. I know you talk and the is it Alex, Dr. Alex Sachs talks about matrescence.
Right, yes.
I think it went like really smoothly. I well, my husband actually went back to work sooner than he anticipated because I hadn't started working yet. I had graduated and got my license, but I wasn't really working. And my husband just took about he took 4 weeks off. And then at around I think around 3 weeks, he was like, "I'm bored. Can I go back to work?" But I think it was because we expected my expectations of postpartum was that it was going to be like totally insane. It was going to be crazy. There was going to be, sleepless nights and not being able to get anything done. So I had the entire Harry Potter series, and I laid on my couch with my son on my chest and read Harry Potter.
Was that like your first week?
That lasted about, I think it took me about 12 weeks to get through all of
Okay, yeah, no, that's
them.
my thinking 2 weeks is ridiculous because that's I couldn't get through one of those books in a week. But you said 12 weeks?
I think to get through all of them, yeah.
So you did spend a really good chunk, like you had that sort of lying in period. You had the cuarentena. You had a good more than 40 days. Yeah.
I did, but I think I did it in like it was I did do a lot of lying around, but I also like went out for walks pretty quickly. Because I was doing so much lying around, my husband would be like, "Okay, I'm going to do the dishes." And I'd be like, "Can you hold the baby and I do the dishes?" So I was still doing like little bits of things where I would like walk to the drugstore and pick something up, by about a week postpartum, just getting out little bits outside and or like going to the local coffee shop while, wearing my son and just like buying the coffee and walking back. And that interspersed with the lying in plus like doing things that make you feel normal, right? Like showering in the morning and doing the dishes once a day because that was one of my household chores prior to, and so it made me feel like I was still like an adult kind of. I think it made for like a really easy transition. I didn't really have a hard time juggling things until I went back to my first birth, which was about 6 months postpartum.
And was it because were you exclusively breastfeeding to then? I
Yes,
didn't even
yeah.
ask you about breastfeeding. Yeah.
We are still breastfeeding. So he actually I tried to latch him right after the suctioning because I figured, I wanted to do the breast crawl, but I figured you know, if that suctioning was probably uncomfortable, so maybe, you know, the comfort of nursing afterwards. And he like was having none of it. He was like, no. So I tried to latch him a couple of times and was just like, all right, fine. We won't breastfeed right now. And actually the bed in the birthing suite was a king size bed. So after I tried to latch him in, it didn't really work. He was on my chest. My husband was beside me, and the three of us had a nap for like 20 minutes. And that was like actually the highlight of my birth experience, was this nap that we had while the midwives were cleaning up. And then I woke up because he was rooting around, and then he latched beautifully. And we did have like a bit of a hiccup the first 2 weeks. He had a tongue tie. And my letdowns were really, really forceful in the beginning, like super forceful. And so, he would just get so overwhelmed where like he would pop off and it would be like spraying him up the nose, and he'd get so gassy because he like couldn't maintain the latch. And at 2 weeks postpartum, we ended up getting the tongue tie, clipped. And then since then, it's basically been smooth sailing with the breastfeeding.
That's fantastic. And how lovely to also get the insight of some, of, you know, being on your way to being a lactation consultant in IABCLC. Experiencing that as well.
Yeah, yeah. I had started my hours while I was pregnant. It was nice to have the experience of like such intense frustration where like I thought I knew what I was supposed to do and like it's just not working and what's going on. Because I sometimes tell mothers now, like, you know, I was literally teaching women how to breastfeed before, like when I was pregnant, and still struggled with breastfeeding in the beginning. So it's hard. It's hard to get the hang of.
And that concept of extreme frustration, both for you and for baby.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Because they get so
extreme frustration and dampness. Like I was soaked all the time with breast milk. Yeah. So the first, by the time that we never introduced bottles. And so when I went back to my first birth, he had just started eating solids. And so my husband had to drive him to and from the birth a couple of times to breastfeed.
Not unheard of.
Yeah. Well, and the person that was my client was very understanding about it.
Well, and you know, I mean, when you're in the baby business and people are having babies, like how can you not be understanding?
Yeah, I've never had someone be upset about my having to pump or having my baby come into, like, I'll just step out of the room to feed him. Yeah. And no one has ever been upset about it.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to make sure, anything we didn't get to, or something that you want to make sure the listeners, all those mighty parents out there, know about?
I think, honestly, like I think the biggest thing, first of all, I didn't hire a doula, and I regret not hiring a doula. I think my husband was really great, and I gave him like a mini doula training. I was like, these are the things that I will want you to do. And he did all those things and he was really fantastic. But I really noticed the difference when my midwife walked in, having a female presence who knew what was going on. And thankfully, because, you know, she's a midwife, she stayed with us through the whole birth, but your OBs and your nurses are in and out of the room. And having that, like, and this is, you know, specifically a female presence for me that knew what was going on, and just like her touch was so different than my husband's. And I think that really, like, I think I would have benefited from that earlier on. And I think so next time I will definitely have a doula.
Okay. Yay. I was surprised.
He's still doing his PhD, and I had just graduated from medical school, so we didn't have a lot of money.
I get it. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't know about being a doula, so I didn't have a doula either, but
yeah. But it was really interesting because I thought he did like a really amazing job and was doing all the things and was very supportive, but the difference between his presence and my midwife's presence was so stark to me while I was in labor. Like, it was just like, oh.
And I think
there you are.
That's where I'm like, I go back to Britta Bushnell's work and how birth will transform you, and also like thinking about archetypes and roles. For mm-hmm. as much as we focus on our modern world, which is true, but you know, there's still these ideas and concepts of archetypes, and it's to distill it to the fact that, like, in simple words, people have different jobs. Like,
yes.
His yeah. role is to be the loving, protective
partner, yeah.
partner, not to be the more of a servant role,
yes.
which, you
yeah.
know, that's what the word doula means in Greek.
Yes, to serve.
Yeah.
And I think probably if I had had a doula, like, someone would have brought me orange juice maybe in the middle of the night as opposed to, like, the next morning, you know? So just like those little things. And yeah, I think I'll definitely have a doula next time.
Well, yeah. Anything else you would do differently?
I think I would like to catch our next baby. My husband got a chance to catch the first one. So I think I would like to catch the next one.
Yay. Sarah, thank you so very much for being on the show today and wanting to share your story. This has been a roller coaster, a delightful roller coaster.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. Oh, one more thing from Sarah.
No, my husband was like, that's completely absurd. And I'm like, I know it's absurd, but it's just an emotion that I'm having.
Okay, so that's a very obvious teaser, but if you want to hear more about what that emotion was all about, along with Sarah's challenges when going back to work, how hard it can be to give up being the primary parent, and some personal musings on both her and my doula work, then you should join us over at the Birthful Patreon, where you'll get the extra audio content for this episode and all other episodes by becoming an official Birthful supporter. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at Birth Song Botanicals and Branch Basics. Go to birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off your postpartum herb bath, and go to branchbasics.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 15% off a starter kit. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin MacLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Losada.